welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, October 1st, 2018. Now some good stuff in the pile today, but you know what? I'm not going to do that. So I have to wrap my head around Heroes in Crisis. I'm not sure what to think about it yet. So instead, I'm going to be doing some news, and there's some interesting stuff I want to talk about. And actually, there's not a whole lot of news, I'll be honest. New York Comic Con is next week, so you know how that goes. I'll be doing an episode sometime later on in the week for some of these stuff that looks really interesting that you should be checking out. But of course, I'll be talking about it on the show at some point. I do want to kick off with a little bat penis because I got some comments on it and it seems that people agree. So the reason I want to talk about bat penis is not the... Well, let's be honest. I just like saying bat penis. But really, I want to talk about Batman Damned because even though we were promised new printings of the book, DC has decided not to do new printings. In fact, not only have they decided not to do new printings, even though they said they were, issues 2 and 3 are delayed. That's right. They're delayed. The book just came out. Why is the book delayed? So issue 2 has gone from November 21st to December 5th. So that's 2 weeks. And then issue number 3 was supposed to be coming out in January, and it's not going to be coming out in March 13th of 2019. Now let me tell you something. This is a three-issue miniseries. Three-issue miniseries. Can someone explain to me why in the world I should be interested in this series anymore? When I have to wait 6 months, 7 months really, to read 3 issues. That makes no sense to me. Now it seems to me like there's gotta be something else going on here, right? Because I'm not gonna talk about more about this issue, but you know, Brian Azzarello was super cool about this thing, and he was selling signed CGC copies of Batman Damned number 1 this past week. I can't remember what day it was. It was like a 1 day only thing for $50. Now I know what you're saying. $50 is a lot of money for a comic. But let me tell you, this book is going for probably twice that on eBay. I haven't checked in a few days, but it's ridiculous. And the fact that he was doing that, I think is pretty cool. Because really, I mean, you're spending already $25 to get a copy CGC anyway. It makes perfect sense, I guess, if you want to get the book and not pay the overpriced, exorbitant sums of money the book is worth on the aftermarket. But what I don't get is why DC is not doing a separate printing. That is kind of what bothers me. And the reason it bothers me is that they're generating some kind of like fake, let's be real, totally fake supply and demand crisis here. If people want to read this book, granted, the reprints were going to have bat penis, right? I talked about that on the episode I put out last week. The reprints were not going to be having the bat penis on them. But people want to read the book because it was severely underordered and now they can't. I think that's kind of crazy. And it kind of hurts, I think, shops in terms of DC. And I'm surprised I haven't heard a little bit more about this. I don't know what shops' thoughts are on this. I haven't talked to any shop owners since the book came out, to be honest. So I really don't know a whole lot about what's happening with shops. I know that there are shops that are actually selling this book for not quite the aftermarket price, but pretty close to it. And I think that's ridiculous. If you still have copies and you're a shop, you should sell this book at regular price. People just want to read the book. I think the problem is people are already trying to flip it. So people are assuming, or shops are assuming, if you want this book, you're going to flip it and, you know, they're going to charge more money because if you really want it, you're going to pay it. But DC, why are you not reprinting the book? What's the reason? And why is this book being delayed? I don't understand this. What is it about, why can't comic book publishers just stick with their publishing schedule? I understand things change. So if you want to give me that argument, I'm not going to disagree with you. I totally agree with you. But the thing is, things change, but on a 3-issue miniseries, that doesn't make sense. Not much can change with a 3-issue miniseries. My assumption is maybe they're trying to rebase some of the stuff that's going to happen with issue 2 and 3. Maybe there was some more bat penis. Maybe there was some cat vagina. I don't know. I hope you're listening with headphones on. Maybe I should put a disclaimer at the beginning. Too late! This episode is not safe for work. I'm just kidding. I do want to continue hearing your thoughts about this. I've got some interesting comments about it. And it seems like there's been penis in other books before. And that's fine. I just don't understand why we're still talking about this. But this actually does bother me. Generating fake supply and demand problems. Come on, guys. We should allow people to buy as many comics as they want so they can read all the... Look, I want everyone to read all the comics. That's all I'm saying. Some people can't afford to read all the comics. I can afford to read quite a few comics. Why generate this thing? I don't understand. Let people read it. Do a reprint. We're going to start a petition. I'm starting a petition to petition to petition DC to start a petition to republish this book. Let's talk about another Batman book. This one I'm actually really excited about. In fact, Nick and I talked about some of this stuff. Matter of fact, I think the news for this came out
as we were ending the episode recording for the last episode we did, episode 166, I think it is. So you can go to nerdlegion.com/episodes/NL-166 to listen to that. But Sean Gordon Murphy, the man, the myth, the legend, is going to continue his Murphyverse. And we knew this, right? We knew that he was going to be continuing doing more books, because even though DC thought that this thing was going to be a dud and not sell, everyone loved this book. I loved the book. I loved it. I think the art was fantastic. The story was interesting. It wasn't the best story, but White Knight was a great book. It was a lot of fun. And of course, he's going to continue doing these kind of things as long as they sell. It makes perfect sense. So the next one in the series will be coming out sometime in 2019. No actual release date has been announced yet, but it is called Batman, Curse of the White Knight. And that's a cool title, I suppose. But what has me really interested is it has Azrael in it. And, you know, Nick and I talked about this a little bit on that episode. Actually, we talked a lot about it. We didn't know that this had come out, I think, like I said. As we were wrapping up the episode, I saw an image that Sean Murphy put on his Twitter account, I believe, with Azrael. But the thing that we talked about is, why is there so much hate with Azrael? And that's something I didn't understand. And I know there's a lot of Batman fans that listen to this podcast, so if you know why people hate Azrael, let me know. If you're an Azrael hater, I want to know why. Because I think Azrael's fantastic. And I think part of me is a little jaded, to be honest with you. I don't know if jaded is the right word. But I love Azrael. When I first started reading Batman comics, it was right before Nightfall. So Azrael was becoming a big part of the universe. Of course, Azrael became Batman for a little while with a costume that I really loved. I know some people hated it because it wasn't true to the Batman mythos. And yeah, that's true. It wasn't. It was very colorful. Gold and blue. Very metallic, very 90s, but very awesome. I loved it. And Azrael himself as a character, he's pretty cool too, even as a standalone. I love the Order of St. Dumas stuff. I love that stuff. He's kind of like is he less crazy? I don't know, maybe as crazy as Moon Knight. He kind of reminds me of Moon Knight. You know, people often compare Moon Knight to Batman. Let me tell you, they should compare Moon Knight to Azrael. I love Moon Knight, and I love Azrael. So I'm really excited to see what Sean Murphy does with Batman Curse of the White Knight. I'm definitely going to be picking this book up, and I hope you'll give it a shot. Check out some of the preview images, by the way. I think they look fantastic. Fantastic. So, very much looking forward to that. Let's go on over to some movie news. This is not really news, but I want to talk about it, because there's some stuff that came out about the Gambit movie being kind of in the genre of the rom-com, the romantic comedy. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And the reason I find it interesting is actually twofold. So, number one, when you first think about it, you're like, ugh, a romantic comedy with Gambit? That seems pretty dumb. And you know what? You're not necessarily wrong. But the producer of the film, Simon Kinberg, who I believe directed Dark Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken, he was talking a little bit about this movie, and it's not filming yet, by the way, which is part of the interesting thing. And the reason it's interesting is this Gambit movie, man oh man, Channing Tatum, that poor soul, he's been trying to make this Gambit movie for years. If you've ever followed this stuff, he's been trying to make this movie, I want to say like 5 years. It's like started production and then just dies after a couple months. Either the director leaves or they want to redo the script or something happens. The only consistent thing about the Gambit movie is that, number one, it keeps on getting not being made. And number two, Channing Tatum wants to really do it. In fact, I think Channing Tatum's production company has always been involved in it. And I can understand why, right? Like, superhero movies are hot, so why not jump on the bandwagon and do one of these things? And I think he'd be a pretty good Gambit from what I've seen of the guy. I haven't followed his career very much, but he seems like somebody that would fit this thing. I'm not sure about the accent. I'm a little worried about the accent, to be honest with you. Cause, you know, Gambit's got that cool Cajun accent. And I don't know if Channing Tatum can do it, but you know what? Maybe he can. Who knows? Anyways, let's talk about this romantic comedy thing. At first I was a little worried about it, but I read into it a little bit and it kind of made sense, right? Because one thing that Marvel has done really well with their movies, and I think one thing that sets them apart from other superhero movies, and I'm talking about Marvel movies within the last 10 years, not the quote unquote amazing stuff that came before it, like, Nick Fury with David Hasselhoff. A classic! If you've never seen it, go watch it. It's terrible, but it's a lot of fun. And some of the other ones that came out before them. But one thing that they've always done is they kind of pick a genre of film. And I talked about this a little bit on last week's episode when I talked about Captain Marvel. They like to pick a genre and kind of base a superhero story around it. And I think that's really cool because it makes for a really interesting new take on a film within the superhero subgenre. Subgenre? Would it be an uber genre? I don't know. Which one goes first? Is it like comedy, sci-fi, whatever, and then superhero below it or a superhero above it? Anyways, romantic comedy. And it's worked out pretty well for him. In fact, I would say one of my favorite Marvel movies, even though, I mean, I guess technically it's not Marvel because it's a Fox movie, but now that Disney's buying Fox, maybe it could and should be considered a Marvel movie, is Logan. I think Logan's fantastic. Logan's one of my favorite ones. I've seen Logan a bunch of times. I think I saw it in theaters twice, and I've seen it since quite a few times. I love Logan. I think Logan's fantastic. And Logan is a Western, and I love Westerns. So that might be part of the reason I enjoyed the movie as much as I did. It's a really interesting take, and they always do these kind of things. You know, I was thinking about this romantic comedy thing, and I can kind of see it, as long as it's not overplayed, right? Because Gambit's kind of like a womanizer, like, smooth dude, right? So I could see this working as a romantic comedy as long as those elements aren't overplayed within the film. I think when you get to that particular genre, in terms of comic book characters, you're walking the tightrope, if you know what I mean. Now, of course, the good thing about this is being a rom-com, it could entice a large segment of the public that wouldn't want to see it. Like my wife, for example. The only superhero movies my wife enjoys are the Deadpool movies. And why that is, I don't know. I'll just assume Ryan Reynolds. That's my assumption. Even though you can't see him, right? And when you see his face, he's just like all burnt up and beat up. But she loves those movies. They're fun. They're funny. They're full of action. And they don't overplay the superhero thing. That may be part of what she likes about it. Because my wife hates superhero stuff. And it's crazy because I love comics and superheroes so much. She's the opposite. But with this being a rom-com, I think she would actually be pretty interested in it. So I hope this Gambit thing actually comes through. You know what I mean? I mean, studios are doing movies right now for like 2020 release, really, like late 2019, 2020. So, I mean, we're still talking like 2 years down the line, right? They don't even have a film date scheduled for this yet. I think the other Sony movie that was kind of being talked about recently was the Morbius movie, and I don't have it in my rundown for what I wanted to talk about today, but you know, that starts filming in November, and that's scheduled to come out sometime at the end of 2019. By the way, Morbius is Jared Leto, and that man must love some goddamn comic books, because he's gone from the Joker to Morbius. I thought he wanted to do another role. I can't remember which one it was, but that's actually pretty interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about the Morbius movie, but I think I'm definitely more interested than I am in the Gambit movie. But we'll see. Channing Tatum, I wish you luck. Oh, man, that could be an episode title. On to more film news. Actually, this is TV news. And one that I actually wasn't expecting, but I guess I shouldn't not expect anything now. Because comic book stuff is hot, man. In fact, the new TV season started. There's a lot of good stuff, man. The Gifted just started back up. Great first episode. All the CW shows are going to be starting back up soon. I'll talk about that here. Well, you know what? I'll talk about that now. CW shows. The crossover is called Elseworlds. I'm not going to dive into it because I don't know what that means. But it could be interesting, actually, if they somehow start tying in all these other CW shows that kind of work with the Arrowverse but are kind of tangential. For example, Supergirl. Now, Supergirl has appeared in the crossovers, but not so much. What if they bring her in and bring her into the main universe? What if they bring Black Lightning into the main universe? That could be interesting. Anyways, those are coming up soon, so stay tuned. I can't wait to watch them. I saw the trailers for them. All the shows look great this season. I'm a little concerned about Legends of Tomorrow because it seems like they're going to go really dark. And I love really dark, but the thing that I love about Legends of Tomorrow is how campy and dumb it is. And if they go really dark, it may not be that way, so we'll see. Back to this TV news, though. Netflix has ordered a 10-episode season of The October Faction from IDW. And I think that's actually really interesting. And actually, really good timing because, you know, it's October. It's Halloween-y month. The best month. By the way, there will be a ton of Halloween-y content. Not so much now, but within the next couple of weeks, I'll be doing a lot of stuff related to horror comics, which, of course, I love. I'm going to have a returning guest, and we're going to talk about some creepy comics. I can't wait for that. I'll make an announcement on it probably within the next week or two. And anyways, The October Faction, which I'm excited for. I thought it was a fantastic book. It's Steve Niles, whom I love. I think he is one of the best current horror writers. And he needs to be doing more books, to be honest with you. He's got a book right now. I wish I remember what the name of it is, but it's like a sci-fi horror book, set in space. And, it's got kind of like an aliens vibe to it. It's really good. I think issue two was delayed a little bit, but I'll see if I can look it up and I'll talk about it on tomorrow's episode. But October Faction coming to Netflix. I think that's cool. And if you never heard of it, it's a gothic horror book, kind of a little Lovecraftian in a way. And, it takes place, in a town with the Allens, who are a family of, I don't know, magic practitioners, I guess you could say. The parents are monster hunters, and the kids are, one's a witch and one's a warlock. It's a boy and a girl. And, it's actually really interesting, so I can't wait to see how this goes. There's no casting yet on this October Faction thing, but, it will be produced by Damien Kindler, who did Krypton, which, by the way, I'm going to do the walk of shame right now. I still have not seen a single episode of Krypton. I'm going to try to fix that, but there's always so much content coming out. Matter of fact, I just watched the first episode of Manifest. I think it's a Fox show. I thought that was actually really good. So check that out. Anyways, October Faction, I'll be keeping a close ear on this one. I'm not sure how long it would take to produce these 10 episodes, but if they were just ordered, I would assume we won't see it probably until sometime at the end of next year. I have no doubt that with New York Comic Con coming up this weekend, we're going to get some more announcements. Speaking of which, I want to talk about two really interesting things. I wanted to get through some of those bits to talk about these two bits of news that I think have been overlooked quite a bit, but I think are actually really quite interesting. The first one is a new comic book universe that's launching this Friday at New York Comic Con in a panel entitled Legion M and Tula Lote Share Exciting Details of a Brand New Comic Book Universe. Wow, that is quite a title. It kind of tells you exactly what it is. I can dig it. So if you're going to New York Comic Con, you might want to check this out. I did a little research on Legion M, and I found, I think that's part of the exciting thing about this. I'm going to talk about that first, and then I'll talk about this shared universe. Legion M is kind of an odd company, and, one that I haven't heard many people talk about. I know they just recently released an indie film called, I want to say Mandy, maybe. I haven't seen it yet, but it looked kind of interesting. I think what's most interesting about Legion M is the structure of the company. And I know I'm boring some of you already, but stick with me, and then maybe you'll understand. So Legion M started out in like 2016, and I believe one of the main founders was like a Hollywood stunt person. And she wanted to do an entertainment company that was basically completely supported by fans of the projects that they do. They've done several fundraising campaigns, kind of like Kickstarter, but I don't think it's on Kickstarter. It's on a different platform. And they've done three rounds. I think they're about to start a fourth round. And they use that money to create projects. So either movies or like TV shorts, things like that. Because it's not a whole lot of money. I think the last round that they raised was like almost $1 million. So when you think about even inexpensive shows, okay, so a show like The Flash on the CW, you know, I've heard people talk about like, oh, the production quality is not the best, blah, blah, blah. It has improved, yes, but it's not like, I don't know, compared to something on, I don't know, a big network, right? Like NBC or Fox, it seems like the budget's lower, but it does take quite a bit of money to make one of those. I think Flash cost a little over $2 million an episode. So think about that, right? Legion M is trying to create content on this little tight budget. Okay, and I'm not sure what the point of it is, but I think it's an interesting tactic, which leads me to the next point on why I find this so interesting is that, you know, over the past couple of years, we've seen Hollywood become more and more interested in comic books. And I've talked about this at length on the podcast many, many times. So the fact that this company is kind of not quite pivoting, but they're adding to their repertoire, their production repertoire, comic books, I find fascinating. Because even though they're not the first company to try this, because of the fact that their fundraising is done by fans of their projects, it could actually be really interesting and actually make these comic books pretty successful, right? Because number one, the barrier of entry will be much lower because a large chunk of the cost of the production of the comic is going to be crowdfunded prior to the work coming out, right? Because it's part of this fund that they raise every, I don't even know how long. They're on round four right now. They've been around 2 years. So we'll just assume every 6 months they do a fundraising round. Pretty interesting, right? We see a lot of this where there's comic book publishers, we'll say, even just creators, that create projects exclusively to turn them into film or TV, right? So Kirkman's a good example, right? Walking Dead wasn't started out that way. The story of Walking Dead, by the way, is fascinating. How he lied to get that book published is fantastic. I love it. But now that he's become very successful, Skybound does do this a lot, right? Because Kirkman has a great connection with Hollywood. Chances are, if you have a book published by Skybound, you're going to be optioned at some point. In fact, I never talked about it, but, what's the book? I want to say Gravity, but that's the Sandra Bullock movie. Now I can't remember it, but the one with no gravity in it, that was recently optioned for, I think, for film, not for TV. And I'm excited for that because I love that book. It's fantastic. So this has happened before, right? In fact, I remember, how long ago was that? Probably 2014, 2015. There were a couple publishers coming out that tried to do this thing. One, I can't recall the name of it and they're defunct now, but they were putting out books that were kind of set within George Romero's zombie universe, but not really. They had a few books, like Sunflower was one of them. I can't remember all of them, but there were a few. And a lot of times they were selling them in bundles. You can get them online. You can get them at your shop. And they're not putting books out anymore. But that was kind of their deal, right? They were going to do these things in order to fast-track production of the comics into movies or TV. There was 451 Comics, which is still around, but I haven't seen them put out a book since the David Baron book came out, which is also brilliant. In fact, I'm going to see if I can get David to come on the show and we'll talk about that book and some of the other stuff because he's doing work at DC now and I think it's quite fascinating. I've been following him for a long time, right? Since even before his Valiant work. But anyways, 451, they're still around, but they don't really put out books, right? They're kind of reprinting. And if I'm not mistaken, that was started by Michael Bay of Transformers fame, in order to kind of find talent to write comics, which they can in turn turn into TV or movies. That also didn't work out. Oh, it doesn't seem like it's worked out. Maybe I'm wrong. But Legion M is kind of in that tradition, and I find that really interesting. And I wonder if this different model of funding the work will actually pay off in the end. And I'm not quite sure yet because of the amount of money that's being raised is quite small. And the structure of the company is actually really interesting and really weird, because basically when you buy into one of these crowdfunding campaigns, you're almost becoming a shareholder of the company. You're buying shares. And, I'm not sure kind of how the structure works. In fact, I tried to look into it and it almost seemed a little schemey. I don't want to actually say schemey because I could be wrong, but just the way that things are phrased, it seemed very odd. But the fact that they're launching a comic universe, I think could be really interesting. In fact, I'm really interested in this first one that they're doing. It is, as I mentioned in the name of the panel, the first book is going to be written by Tula Lote. I'm not sure if she's doing the art or if they're actually going to have Danny Strips do the art, because Danny Strips is also credited for this book. But I'm not familiar with Danny too much, but Tula is just brilliant. Brilliant artist. I wish she was doing this book. The first one that's kind of been teased, there's a teaser image for the new book. It's called Gunn, and it's spelled G-W-N-N, and it kind of stands for the girl with no name. But it looks cool. It looks like it could be maybe a Western or some kind of like, cop story, maybe, like a sheriff in the Wild West kind of thing. We'll see. We're going to learn more on Friday. But I'm really interested to see what the process is on this and how they plan to sustain a new shared universe in the market as it is today. Because we've seen this kind of thing, right? And it doesn't always work out, right? A lot of the indie publishers don't do shared universes because it's hard. It's very hard. I mean, look at Catalyst Prime. I love those books when they first came out. I was reading all of them. And now I'm like months behind on the majority of them. The only shared universes that I still enjoy are Marvel and DC stuff. Of course, I still read Valiant, but it just, Valiant doesn't feel the same as it used to, right? It's ever since Dinesh and that whole crew left. They're still putting out good books. It just doesn't feel the same. So I'm wondering how this is going to work out. I'm definitely going to be following this Legion M panel on Friday quite closely, just to see what their plans are. And I can't wait to see the interior images for this book, because that's a pretty good creative team. In fact, the entire book is going to be a female creative team. So we'll see as well how that goes. It's nothing new. And all these people seem really talented. So I'll be following up on this next week after New York Comic Con is over. Now, the other one that's really interesting, and another one that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about, and I'm going to tell you, fair warning, I'm going to geek out about this a little bit, is a new book called Unknown Nine Archives. That's written by John Nate Reber, who wrote Books of Magic, Captain America, G.I. Joe, and art by the one and only amazing Jay Lee. Gotta love Jay Lee art. Love it. Love it. I wish he did more stuff. Now, when I first saw this bit of news come through my eyeballs, I was like, yeah, okay, that's cool. Like a new book. It's kind of, how do you explain it? It's kind of like the hidden history of humanity. In fact, let me read what this book is about. It says, John Nate Reber and Jay Lee explore history to shed light on events that change the course of humanity forever. Follow Kieran, a reckless young merchant who encounters a mysterious woman, opens his eyes to his family's centuries-old involvement with a secret network of traders and explorers dedicated to the discovery of ancient hidden knowledge. And I love everything about that synopsis. Like, I saw that, and I was like, I'm sold on this book just for the Jay Lee art, but I kept reading. This sounded really cool. And there were a couple pages of preview in the article, I think like 3 or 4 pages. And I was like, okay, it looks great, right? It looks like Jay Lee art. And then I saw that they're going to be doing a preview. So when you go to your comic shop, actually, you know what? It's not available in print. You'll have to do this digitally, folks. If you hate digital, it's too bad. This Wednesday, October 3rd, you can go to Dark Horse Digital, Comixology, iTunes, Google Play Books. I guess that's what it's called now. I don't even know. And you can get a free 9-page preview of what this book will be about. Now, the book's not going to be out until spring of 2019, which is really a long time. I hope that they can continue the marketing campaign, and I think they can, and I'll talk about that in a second. I think that's what the most interesting thing about this is. Because even though we're going to have to wait at least 6 months between the preview and the time the book comes out, there's quite a bit of buzz around this. So Jay Lee's going to be at New York Comic Con. He's going to be doing a signing on Saturday. So there will also be preview books available there at the booth. So that could be interesting. If you are at New York Comic Con, I will not be, unfortunately, then see if you can find me a copy and send it this way. But I'll be checking out the digital copy. What is really interesting about this is that this is not just a comic book. It's an entire entertainment media experience. And let me just say that before I recorded this podcast, I kind of became engrossed in it for probably like 30 or 40 minutes. And that's not even a lie. So the plan for this, and originally it's the whole thing is stemming out of something from Reflector Entertainment, which I'm not familiar with. But the plan for Reflector Entertainment is to do movies, TV, video games, novels, TV shows, and comic books. Did I say TV shows twice? I don't know. And comic books. Comic books is what I'm most interested in. And it's all going to be the Unknown Nine. So, in fact, you can go to unknown9.com, and you'll see all the stuff that's listed on there. They have the writer of the novel listed on there. There's a podcast, actually. There's, I think, 3 episodes in the podcast. And what's really cool about this is that everything is actually related to this secret society that the comic is going to be kind of exploring. It's called the Leap Year Society. And so these are like archives of interviews of people dealing with the Leap Year Society. There's all kinds of stuff available on this website. I thought it was actually really quite brilliant, because they're treating this kind of like the Leap Year Society is a real thing in the real world. And they have some really smart people working on this marketing campaign. So once you go to that website, you'll see that, you can listen to the podcast, whatever. There's a Institute for Higher Knowledge website, which is kind of like an arm of the Leap Year Society. And you can actually go on there and sign up for their newsletter. But the cool thing is, it's not just like you go in and you put your email. you put in your email and then they give you a test. And if you pass the test, you get another email with additional information. I'll get to that in a second. If you don't pass the test, there's actually a way for you to still pass the test. And I tried this several times. The first one I failed on purpose. The second one I did not fail. And I'm not going to explain to you how to do it and how not to do it. But, this is actually really cool because it reminds me of some of like there's like cipher conspiracies. In fact, there was one a few years ago. What was it called? It was like moth something, moth and a number. And, like you solved a puzzle, a riddle, and that gave you the next step, and it gave you a different puzzle that was a little bit harder. And there was a lot of steps for you to take in order to achieve the final step of the process. And, like you would be sent secret codes that you had to encode or de-encode. There would be like secret messages and images and all that. And I find that all that fascinating. I find that fascinating. And the fact that this company is doing this effort between all kinds of media, but relating them somehow into one thing and actually generating an experience, right? One thing that I talked about in terms of comics, and I'm going to always bring it back to the comics, is how, what will comics look like in 10 years, right? So I've talked about before that I feel like in 10 years or 15 years, we're not going to have necessarily just a typical comic book shop experience. There's going to be like boutique comic shops, okay? And that's where you go and get all your print comics. There may not be as many as there are now, okay? It'll be a boutique experience, much more personalized. There may be like interactive stuff around the store with technology or whatever, but it'll be a much more boutique experience, okay? Print comics will be a little more niche. Because I do see, even though maybe digital comics aren't as popular as some people might be lead us to believe, and actually some people tell us they're not very popular, I think within the next 10 or 15 years, that's going to be quite a change. In particular, for companies that embrace new and different ways of doing comics, right? So if you look at like the retail environment right now, okay, and I'm trying to make an example. So if you look at the retail environment right now, a lot of retailers are shutting down or they're in dire straits, some of them. Some of them are trying new and different things to try to entice customers to come in because Amazon sells so much product that it's pushing a lot of business out of the brick and mortars and into online. Okay. And it makes total sense. Funny enough though, Amazon's actually opening up stores, right? So, I don't know if anybody follows technology that listens to this podcast, but Amazon's got their no employee self-checkout store in Seattle that they've been testing. And within the next 3 years, I think it is, they plan on opening 3,000 locations around the country, which is fascinating, I think. Anyways, if you want to look that stuff up, look it up. It's actually really cool. There's some great videos on what the shopping experience is. But I kind of see that with comics. And the way to do that is to generate an experience that really engrosses you in the story, right? So this Unknown Nine thing, by having you join this Institute of Higher Knowledge, which obviously is not a real thing, is a cool like marketing technique because it gives you something that makes you excited about the material, right? Like if you look at the website for the Institute of Higher Knowledge, it looks like a religion website, like a Scientology website, I guess. I don't know. I've never been to the Scientology website, but it looks kind of like that, right? Like there's a philosophy section and there's like deep sayings and it's like an experience. You're walking through this website. Same thing when you take the enrollment test. And I think all that's fascinating. And to bring that into all these different types of media, right? TV, the novels, the movies, the comic book, I think is great, right? Because for the company itself, if you become interested in this, it engrosses you and makes you want to participate in all the types of media, not just the comic and not just the movies and not just the TV, right? And that's something that we see with other things, like Marvel, right? Marvel does very well with their comics, of course, but Marvel comics don't sell as much as Avengers Infinity War, the movie, right? A lot more people want to go see that. But I think when you have an experience like this, you actually can bring in quite a larger audience by having them participate in all these different types of media and make the reader or the viewer or the listener in terms of the podcast part of the experience, right? It's because it's placing you within the story itself. And I think that's so magical and great, right? A great thing about the comic book experience is that it's a visual media, but in multiple ways, right? Because there are words that you're reading and there are pictures that you're looking at. And the two things combine into one. And when those two things work really well together, you feel like you become part of the story in some way, right? That's why I feel like there's so many people that are, they feel so entitled to some comic book characters, for example, because they really feel engrossed in that world for whatever reason. And I think this is actually a really interesting initiative. And 909 is something that I'll be following very closely because, I am very curious. I didn't go through all the steps. I did receive, I was entered into the Institute for Higher Knowledge. I am a commander. So, follow me to the, initiative. But, I'm a commander in there and they send me these codes and anyways, you can verify these codes. If you follow through the experience, you'll see what I mean. Once you verify, you'll be taken to different websites and there's some interesting stuff. One led me to this video game called Soul Hematoma, which I played for like 10 minutes. It wasn't very interesting, but, it was kind of a cool experience, right? It's kind of like the old, click and text video games, right? Where like people are talking in text and you choose your own adventure kind of thing. Kind of cool, well done, but very, very simplistic. And it's free, you don't have to pay for it or anything. But I'm looking forward to seeing this, and I want to see more about this book over the weekend. I hope there's some more information. I'll definitely be checking out the preview on Wednesday, and I hope you will too, because you might be surprised. I hope it can deliver, because they're trying to do some really big things. The subject matter that's being tackled is very deep and very complex. And if they're going to try to do this across different kinds of media, then I wish them the best of luck. But right now, I'm really enjoying the ride, and I hope you will as well. That's it for all the news I wanted to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about the comics coming out this week, because there are a lot of comics coming out this week, and man, there's some good comics coming out this week. I'll kick off with Aftershock Comics and talk about Lollipop Kids number 1. This is written by Adam Glass with art by Diego Rapoor, and actually co-written by Aiden Glass, who is Adam Glass's son. In fact, the idea for this book came from Adam's son, Aiden, and I think that's super cool. Man, let me tell you, I love my dad, but God, if my dad was a comic book writer and I was like, Dad, let's do the story, and he's like, hell yeah, let's do it, that would be freaking awesome. So this is a new series. It's kind of, I don't want to say YA. I hate calling books YA, but, you know, because it's co-written by Adam's son and he is a kid, it does kind of reach kind of an all ages audience. And it follows a group of kids who are kind of monster hunters in, I want to say in New York, but I'm not sure if that's correct. And, anyways, the cover looks super cool. I can't wait to check this book out. I haven't gotten my preview copy yet, but it's still early. As a matter of fact, it's a little too early in the week, so that's why I didn't get them. But, I love Adam Glass. He's done some amazing work over at Aftershock. You know, he's done The Normals and a couple other books. Really fantastic stuff. And, I can't wait to see what Lollipop Kids is like. Art looks fantastic too. Over at Dark Horse, we've got Death Orb number 1, written by Ryan Ferrier, whom I really adore, with art by Alejandro Aragon. And, this is kind of a, what was this described as? Like a action heavy manga story meets Road Warrior. And I know some people don't like the manga style, but, I love manga. I really do. I wish I had time to read more because, manga books are so thick, but, I don't. I read too many comics as it is. If I brought manga in, I would never do anything. I would just be reading comics all the time. But, looks pretty cool. I love Road Warrior, right? Mad Max. Fantastic stuff. And, this follows Ryder, who is an axe wielding wasteland survivor. Yes, it's a post-apocalyptic book, if you couldn't tell by the Mad Max reference. Carves a bloody path across a war-torn North America, ruled by the Lords, the mysterious father, and their cult followers as he searches for his abducted wife and child. That sounds freaking awesome. Count me in. Over at DC, I've got a couple. Nightwing number 50 is out this week, written by Ben Percy, with art by Chris Moneyham. And this is, of course, the kickoff to the, I think, four-part arc in which things change for Nightwing. If you look at the cover, in fact, he's got a Nightwing scar on his head. And I don't want to spoil this book, but Scarecrow shows up and bad things happen to Nightwing. I'm actually excited for this. I was a little unsure when I first heard the news that they were going to kind of change the direction of Nightwing a little bit. But seeing what, the kind of chance that DC has taken with Red Hood and the Outlaws, which, by the way, go pick that book up. Do yourself a favor. Issue 26 was so good. So good. I mean, Red Hood turns into the Punisher, and he is awesome. But, you know, once I saw that, and I was like, yeah, this really works. I'm kind of curious to see what steps Nightwing will take. And I think it's actually really interesting and maybe kind of about time, right? Because even though Dick became Nightwing to gain his own persona, right? And step away from the shadows of Batman, he still has always been very much a part of the Bat family. And I think in particular after New 52 and then with Rebirth, that's been even more the case. And I wouldn't mind seeing him kind of become his own person, kind of like he always wanted to be. And I'm looking forward to this new arc, Nightwing number 50 from DC Comics. From IDW, kind of a DC book, is Batman the Max. John Layman, Sam Keith. I mean, do I have to say any more? Batman? I love Batman. Batman's the best. He's number one in my book. The Max? The greatest Image title of all time? John Layman? Okay, I like John Layman. Sam Keith? F yeah. Count me in. I don't know what this is going to be, but it sounds freaking awesome, and it's going to be insane because the Max is in it. And if you've never read the Max, do yourself a favor and go read that book. It is brilliant. Brilliant. I loved it. From Image Comics, Blackbird number one, written by Sam Humphries. Yes, that's Sam Humphries. The Nightwing Sam Humphries, with art by Jen Bartel. And this is actually kind of interesting, too. It might be up my alley, so that's why I'm putting it on the list. It follows Nina Rodriguez, who is absolutely positive that there's a secret magic world ruled by ruthless cabals hidden under LA, and nobody believes her. In fact, everyone thinks she's crazy, but guess what? She's not crazy. Dun dun dun! This sounds awesome. I'm gonna check this out. I hope it lives up to what I have in my head into what it could be. Also from Image Comics, Juke Joint, number one. It's a 5-issue miniseries written by T. Franklin with art by Aletha Martinez. And the only reason I'm really interested in this is that it's a horror book set in New Orleans. And let me tell you, if there is one place that is tailor-made for horror stories, is New Orleans. So I hope there's a ton of voodoo magic in here because I love voodoo crap. And the cover looks freaking awesome. It's got a woman with blood coming out of her mouth, and she looks like she has pulled a predator on this guy, right? Pulled the head out with the spine on it. So maybe eating his face, eating his entrails. I don't know. This could be really interesting. I'm not going to say exactly what I feel about this book yet until I check it out. But really looking forward to Juke Joint number one. I'm always happy to get more horror comics on my pull list. Over at Marvel Comics, we've got Superior Octopus number one, written by Christos Gage, which he is freaking awesome. He's doing a fantastic job on Ninjak. Art by Mike Hawthorne, another fantastic person. Great artist. And this brings back, Doc Ock as a Superior Octopus. I mean, if you've never read that run, what was that called? Superior Spider-Man? That was such a fantastic run. I love the way that they pulled it off where Doc Ock could become Spider-Man. And this is kind of a follow-up to that. I love the new costume. And I think this is a fantastic creative team, so definitely checking this one out. Also from Marvel Comics, we've got X-Men Black Magneto number one. And the reason I'm putting this on my list is because it's written by Chris Claremont. And as we all know, he is the greatest X-Men writer of all time. I hope that this can deliver. And one thing I'm a little worried about is that it's a one-shot. And the great thing about Chris Claremont, and he's one of those writers that can tell a long story. And because it's a one-shot, I'm a little concerned that maybe he won't be able to tell exactly the story that I want to see. But I'll take Claremont anytime. So looking forward to this one. X-Men Black Magneto number one. And finally, from Waxwork Comics, I've got Poser number two, written by friend of the show Matt Miner with art by Clay McCormick. And let me tell you, I don't know if anybody picked up the first issue of Poser after I had Matt on and we chatted, what was that, 2 weeks ago now? But that book is actually really, really quite good. And things are going to be kicking up quite a bit. Starting with Poser number two. So definitely cannot wait to check this out. It's a little expensive. If you can get it from your shop, it'll be just regular price, $3.99. If you get it from Waxwork, it actually comes with a vinyl record, and the soundtrack to this thing is freaking awesome. It is $14.99 when you do that, so a little more expensive, but well worth it. You can actually get the soundtrack on SoundCloud, if I'm not mistaken. But they're really quite good. It's a slasher punk rock themed comic book. And it's great. It kind of reminded me of I Know What I Did Last Summer. a movie which I still love. Don't hate me. Hashtag unpopular opinion. I Know What You Did Last Summer is a great horror slasher flick. And those were really popular when I was growing up. I mean, there were tons of them. There was that. What was the other one? Scream. We had, Final Destination. God, those are great. Yeah, tons of those. So looking forward to poser number two as well. That is going to wrap up this episode of Comic Talk Today. Thank you all for listening. Of course, if you want to get in touch, Twitter is the best place, at Geekvine. Email nerdylegion@gmail.com. And check out all the other great shows on the network, including, of course, the Bat Pod, which is brand new, and Bill Beer is kicking ass on that podcast. So go check that out if you're a Batman fan. I'll be doing some stuff for the podcast as well. I'll be doing a little something-something for it within the next week or so. I was going to try for their next episode, but my schedule didn't allow it, so look for that soon. Look for that soon. That's going to be it. I'll be back tomorrow with Top of the Pile, and it's a jam-packed week. Jam-packed week. I didn't record for, a week and a half? Now I've been jonesing. There's going to be probably 4 or 5 episodes this week, so I'll catch you on the next one.